The Baseball Bat, Chapter 2, In the Beginning. When my mother was very young, her parents immigrated from a small Protestant Hungarian town about 40 miles from Budapest. My mother and her parents settled in Ferndale, Michigan, where her father worked in one of the Dodge Brothers factories, which later became known as Chrysler, to make a living. According to my mother, my father's parents also immigrated from Hungary and settled in Ferndale, where his father also worked for the Dodge Brothers. My mother and father met in high school and began dating. They went to movies and dances together. My mother told me they even talked about getting married. But when she found out she was pregnant, the news was too much for my father, and he decided to leave her. I didn't really think about my father much. I wondered sometimes why he would never come to see me. Every year before Christmas, my mother and I would get a Christmas card from my father with a check for $20 and a note that simply read, "For Thomas." My mother then used his return address to send a card back with a current picture of me and a little about how I was doing, which only included the positive aspects of my life. Last year she wrote, "Most people now call him Tom, and he is doing great in school. He does very well in math, English, social studies, and spelling. As you can see, he's becoming a very handsome young man. He has taken an interest in music and sings very well along with the radio. He is also becoming very athletic and runs about constantly. Helen." She graciously left out any trouble that I had gotten into and some of my low grades. We lived with Grandma and Grandpa Moshina until the summer before I started kindergarten. My mother worked as a dispatcher for a trucking company, and Grandma stayed home with me. I don't have too many memories of this time, but I can remember two experiences, both relating to my uncle. He once scolded me for taking one bite out of several cookies, which I had cleverly thought would claim them as mine. My mother had often told me if I touched food, I had to eat it. I can remember another time when he was holding me and not letting me go. This feeling of being trapped felt horrible to me at the time. My mother was very involved in a Methodist church in Ferndale. She had developed some good friendships. One of her friends mentioned that her parents were selling a little house out in West Bloomfield Township and suggested that it would be a good purchase. After seeing the house and the community, my mother, at the age of 23, decided it would be a good decision to buy this house as a place to raise her son. She thought it would be good to move from the city to the country, even though today this area is considered part of the Detroit suburbs. She was able to buy this very small two-bedroom house with one bath, one living area, and a kitchen with a loan from her father. Although the house was very small, the property was bordered by a wooded area to the west and the north, which belonged to the property owners who had lakefront houses on Upper Straits Lake. Across the street from the house was another wooded area, and the homes were very spread out. So the only neighbors on our side of the street were to the east. I don't remember thinking much about the move until the day we arrived. There was a dead cat in the driveway. I watched as one of the church volunteers who helped us move picked up the cat with a shovel and flung it into the woods. I remember starting kindergarten and trying to make friends. I didn't really realize at the time that I was one of the only kids with a single mother, and that I was from one of the least expensive homes in the area. I remember trying to be friendly to the other kids, but I didn't react well when they would do something I didn't like. I developed very high morals from my mother's religious training. I was friendly and polite. I never stole, cursed, or purposely broke any rules of the home or the school. However, when someone did something that seemed to be an attack on me, I felt that person must be punished, and I often took things into my own hands to correct their wrongdoing. By third grade, I was one of the bigger boys, and I continued this same pattern of behavior. If anyone crossed me, he should be taught a lesson. Teachers tried to tell me to just walk away, but it didn't seem possible. So I ended up in many fights that year. I got into a fight during the last week of school in third grade, and the principal suspended me from attending the end of the year party on the last day of school. Of course, I thought my punishment was extremely unfair. None of the fights that I had gotten into were started by me. I was nice and kind to others. Why should I be punished? I was only trying to help out society by teaching these other boys a lesson. I remember reading the letter from my teacher, typed up on an old typewriter. She listed the dates of my fights, which appeared to be every couple weeks. Usually these fights consisted of pushing, punching, or pinning someone up against the wall until the teacher came to break us up. However, the last fight I got into that year was a little worse. I was carrying a baseball bat in from the playground, and some boy said to me that I couldn't play baseball if I tried. Now, since I truly believed I was going to be one of the greatest Detroit Tiger players ever, how could he disrespect me like this? I ran toward him, swinging the baseball bat. Luckily for him and me, he was able to run. I justified it in my mind that he deserved to be punished for this outrageous comment. And it was very difficult to me to stay home that day when I knew my classmates were having fun on the last day of school party. What did they think of me? Even though I was hurt by being suspended, what hurt me even worse was what a girl in my class, Rosemary, said to me when I asked her which of the girls liked me. Rosemary responded, "Tom, none of the girls like you because you get into too many fights." That hit me like a ton of bricks. I really wanted to be well-liked and have the cute girls like me. How could I have the girls like me and still keep the boys, the mean boys, in line? I thought a lot about this, and I thought, maybe I should just walk away. I just couldn't come to grips with this solution to the dilemma. Fourth grade started out somewhat better because, well, how could it have been worse than third grade? I actually did walk away from many potential fights, but I felt ashamed of myself for being so passive. The thoughts of feeling so disrespected would last for hours. Academically, I could have been a good student through the fourth grade, but I rushed my work and I made careless mistakes. For me, it was a competition to be the best. I wanted to be the first one done, and I wanted the highest grade on any assignment. Typically, I succeeded in being the first one done, but not getting the highest grade. My thinking was that I was the best at everything and could show it by showing the others that I was the first one done with an assignment or a test. It never crossed my mind to work in cooperation with the other top students. Maybe it was due to me being an only child. My report cards indicated that I made a lot of careless mistakes by rushing my work, but it didn't seem to matter to me. Socially, I had a few casual friends with whom I played games and talked about Batman, The Monkees, and Laugh-In, three popular television shows at the time. I only saw these friends at school and never asked them to come to my house. I didn't want them to see how poor we were. I had the album More of the Monkees and loved the song She. I would sing it over and over. I thought that my voice sounded just like Mickey Dolenz, one of the singers and the drummer for the Monkees. There was a line in the song, "She needs someone to walk on so her feet don't touch the ground." I wasn't sure how to interpret that, but somehow I thought it was that is what I wanted in a girlfriend. During the summers, my mother had me stay with her parents during the day and then would pick me up after she was done working. I enjoyed talking to Grandpa about sports. On weekends, I liked exploring the areas surrounding our home. I would ask my mother if I could go out, and I did almost every weekend. I would venture off into a path into the woods and then go down the hill that led to the lakefront homes on Upper Straits Lake. One of the homes was owned by Dr. Ray and Ruth Davis, who my mother and I had met at West Bloomfield Baptist Church. We had all attended. Dr. Davis was usually outside doing something in the yard. I rarely saw Mrs. Davis because she stayed inside the house. Soon after my last day suspension from third grade, Dr. Davis was out putting a new board on a picnic table, and I heard him say, "Tommy boy!" I came over to where he was and said, "How are you, Dr. Davis?" He responded, "I'm great as always, but please, call me Gramps." I believe he was 60 years old at the time. I thought about telling him that I preferred being called Tom, but I just decided to go along with Tommy boy because he said it in such a pleasant way. I didn't think that he was trying to disrespect me, but I did think of boys at school calling me names. "Gramps, what are you working on?" "Well, I had to put a new board in the picnic table because it rotted over the winter." Then he asked me, "Do you know how to catch a bear?" I looked at him puzzled and said, "No." "You cut a hole in the ice and put a bunch of peas around it. When the bear comes to take a pee, you kick him in the ice hole," he said with a smile. For a 9-year-old boy, hearing "take a pee" was very funny, and I giggled and laughed, understanding the pun. However, it wasn't until years later that I also understand there was a pun in "ice hole" as well. Gramps often tried to make me laugh, so I always enjoyed talking to him when he was out. Gramps was a family physician and also worked as a professor at Michigan State University, teaching others to be doctors. He worked one day a week in the family practice. He had the summers off from his position at the university. Gramps appeared to love his lake house and keeping up his property. I could see his front yard from the top of the hill. He kept the grass mowed and had many trees, shrubs, and flowers. He had a long driveway, maybe 250 yards, which reached my street, Pontiac Trail. He had his own plow to remove snow in the winter. Although Gramps was about 10 years older than my grandparents, he seemed much younger. He was much thinner than Grandpa and much more active. He smiled a lot and usually couldn't wait to tell me something funny. Gramps spent a lot of time in his backyard. He had a huge deck off his back door with a lot of patio furniture. His backyard had a grassy area with trees and a sandy area that bordered Upper Straits Lake. He would bring in sand every year to keep up his beach area. He also had a dock that protruded onto the lake, where he kept 3 rowboats. He'd build a raft out of boards and steel drums. Each side was 10 feet long, and he would anchor it in the lake in about 15 feet of water. On the raft, he built a ladder by welding pipes together. His entire property was very beautiful. I dreamed that this would be my home someday. People could walk into the water for about 30 to 50 feet, depending on your height, and then swim a short ways to the raft. Gramps enjoyed letting me swim there. I would only go as far as I could touch the bottom, but I practiced swimming so that I could one day swim to the raft. Gramps also loved to have his adult children, their spouses, and his grandchildren and other friends come to the house and swim and go for boat rides. Just about every weekend day, I would look for Gramps. If he had heard about my school suspension from someone at church, he never said anything to me. I became more and more comfortable with him. One day, I told him that I had been suspended unfairly and told him about having to defend against people who had said mean things to me. Gramps listened intently. Then he asked me, "What are your goals for this year in fourth grade?" "Goals? What do you mean?" Gramps said, "What kind of grades do you want to get?" "All A's," he asked. "Did you get all A's this past year?" I said, "I got A's, B's, and a C in handwriting." Then he said, "So, if you want to get all A's this year, what are you going to do differently?" I didn't have an immediate response to his question, so he asked me another question. "What other goals do you have?" I told him, "I want to have a lot of friends and not get suspended. But if other people are mean to me, I won't reach that goal. I'm always nice to others, but they still say mean things to me." He asked me, "Do you expect everyone to be nice to you in the fourth grade?" "Yes, I am nice, and they should also be nice. At church, we're taught, do unto others as you would have others do unto you." Gramps responded, "It seems to me like it's asking a lot of all the other fourth graders to always be nice to you. How many friends do you want?" "I want everyone to be my friend." "Tommy boy, you're one of the finest young boys that I've ever met. But I don't know anyone whom everyone likes. I want you to meet your goals and be successful. I hope you will think about your goals and your plan to achieve them. I would be happy to help you with your plan." "Would you fight the mean kids for me?" "Tommy, one of my goals is to have peace in my life and not fight anyone except for an occasional spat with my wife when she tells me she doesn't want pizza on Friday nights." I thought a lot about what Gramps had told me, and I did think a lot about my own goals. I vowed to never get suspended again. I also thought about what Rosemary had said. I was determined to do better in the fourth grade. It turns out that I would go on to do somewhat better. I didn't get suspended. I got into less fights. I got more A's than B's. However, I didn't have a lot of friends. But I didn't know any of this then.